Welcome to Reinventing Nerds. Dr. Joni Cannell shares communication strategies for technical people. She shares her own stories of learning to communicate and brings in other nerds and experts to show you how to interact with people in a way that's comfortable for you. And now, here's your host, the uniquely qualified engineer-turned-psychologist, Dr. Joni Cannell.
Hello and welcome to Reinventing Nerds. Today we have Bob Solomon. He is the president of CIO Systems. He has a really interesting tagline for his company. It's called We Make IT Boring, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But first, I'd like to tell you what they do over at CIO Systems and a little bit about Bob. They do IT management, security, and they help employees be more productive with unlimited support. I found that kind of interesting. It's unlimited, so they can really help with the employee productivity. But Bob is also a leader in the community. He is a board member at the National City Chamber of Commerce and also at the South Bay Economic Council. So he's got a lot of stuff going on in work and outside. So let's welcome Bob. So hi, Bob.
Hello. How's everything going? Thank you for having me today.
Oh, things are going well, especially since you're here, because I'm really looking for your interesting story. So thank you so much for giving us your time today.
My pleasure.
Well, you know, Bob, you do have an interesting story. And instead of just sort of asking you more about what you do, I wanted to start right in with that. Because you're willing to share information about yourself, like that you have dyslexia and ADD. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've said that you're willing to share how that helped you get into tech and, you know, how you've dealt with that all your life.
Well, it's been a major stumbling block and also path for me. So I grew up in the 60s and 70s. At the time, it wasn't quite understood. They were starting to understand. But I did terrible in school. I was a C, D student for most of my elementary and high school. I only got into college because at the time, it was very easy to get into state university. All you have to do is score a certain level on an SAT, and that was it. It was just a chart. And I felt, because my SAT scores were so high, even though my grades were very bad, I automatically got into state, so I went to Cal State Long Beach. And there, I was the first time I ever had really, it was actually the second time I ever had an option to touch a computer. So at the time, back then, it was virtually impossible for the average person to get close to a computer.
I remember that.
Yes. So, and so there was an Apple II in the, library, and I started programming on that. And one of my fellow nerd friends, he actually was part of the mathematics department, and gave me an account on the school mainframe, a PDP 1170 for the nerds out there. And there wasn't a good word processing program at that time. There was text and some other applications, but they were very bad at doing to really type. You were constantly switching between modes, and also you wouldn't show you a cursor at the time. You had to remember where you were and then type commands to move forward or back to a document. So it was very cumbersome. So I actually wrote my own word processing program with a dictionary. So that's a major accomplishment, to be able to create a dictionary while you're dyslexic. But So I was actually the first person to hand in computer-generated homework for a liberal arts class.
Interesting.
And the teacher actually had to go to the academic senate to get approval to accept my homework.
Wow. It wasn't handwritten, you mean, or typed?
Yeah, at that time, it had to be handwritten or typed, usually typed. Yeah. And so since it was generated from a computer, there was some concerns because no one had ever done that before. and so obviously since it was accepted and was allowed through, so next time you can submit your homework on a computer versus having to type it out, you can thank me for that.
Yes, thank you, Bob.
So my pleasure. while I was there also, they had a program for adults with learning disability program at California State, which was an excellent program. I was very happy that I got into that. So with those that support, I was able to graduate on the president's honor roll. So I went from a C student to being on a president's honor roll by being, being able to do my work on the computer and hand it in that way. It just made all the difference in the world. Plus, they taught me a lot of other things. Because it was just, for so long, it was impossible to communicate by writing, because I'd think of words, but I would think of them phonetically, and there was no real easy way of looking it up in a dictionary.
I see.
And so it was, a lot of times I would have to find synonyms to words, because I couldn't think of how to spell a word. So I had to find another word or phrase, and it was very hard to edit. And, even when I edited it, I created errors in my edits. So it was very, very hard. And it was basically, and this is through my entire life, I had very negative self-view of myself because everything I did was terrible. And so my teachers, I have a sister who's about 2 years older. She's one grade ahead of me. And she was the exact opposite of me. She was like A student. Everybody loved her. Very sociable. And then I came along and I remember in music class, she was a high class cellist. She played the cello in the county opera. County orchestra, and I came along, and the teacher put a violin in my hands, and it was horrible. And the look of horror and disappointment on the teacher is still to this day. And then same thing happened in Spanish class. My parents grew up in Colombia, and they speak Spanish. And the teacher who had just had my sister when I came in, the disappointment on her face after dealing with me was once again the same thing. It was just so through my life, I got a lot of negative feedback, and that definitely shaded my life view. And it just until recently, I've been putting things into better context.
How did you turn that around? How did you empower yourself? To be able to feel better about yourself and, be so successful and like run a company, for goodness sakes.
Well, actually, it's fairly common for people with ADD. I've been reading up on the subject. I was just recently diagnosed with ADD, and reading up on the subject, it's fairly common for people with ADD to run companies, because I would have been just a horrible employee. I was always a bad employee.
Right.
I have a lot of anxiety when doing a task, especially if somebody's watching me. So I'm fine if you leave me alone, but if you watch me and, I get very nervous, I start making mistakes. Mm-hmm. And so, so it's easier for me to be an employer than an employee. So that's one of the reasons I have my own company, is actually one of those very common copes with the disabilities. So, it's a lot easier. So to have your own company when you have dyslexia and ADD.
Well, that's fascinating. It actually kind of explains a lot. I mean, you think about a lot of CEOs and all that too. They, whether or not they're diagnosed, they definitely have their attention scattered in a lot of different directions. And so, that might actually, come into play in positive ways as well, and being able to switch gears a lot. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's more because, just as I said, I'm fairly bright, but I have a hard time communicating sometimes.
Yep.
And so that, then it comes out as frustration.
Yep.
To a lot of people, and people, you get in trouble. So that was what was happening when I worked other places. So it was easier for me to work in my own place. And then I have a technician who I send out. And when I know I'm going to be frustrated about something, I let him take a lot of that stuff. And so I can work in the background and take care of stuff, and he can deal with the people.
Yeah, I think being able to delegate is key. especially when you're the leader, you can do that and then realize, I mean, when you have a team of people who complements you with their strengths and the communication. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, let's see. So you talked about a little bit about how you started your company. And we've gone a little bit about the services that CIO Systems offers, but do you want to tell us a little bit more about your role there and what you do at the company?
What we do is basically our main function is outsourced IT. So outsourced help desk. So probably the most of our calls are people having little problems, like just this morning at 7 o'clock, one of my nice clients called me up and couldn't find some emails. And so I logged in and she had accidentally deleted them and also missorted some of her Outlook files. So we took care of that. I mean, my attitude is you always want to take care of the little grains of sand problems right away because they tend to fester. So we try to answer the calls right away and deal with those problems right away. Our more important function is managing the background, the situation, making sure the backups are happening, make sure that the security is in place. So when there is a problem like this morning, I was able to recover her emails with no problem. And but we can do that by having everything else in place and making sure everything's protected. And one of the things I always tell people is I've monetized my paranoia.
Oh, that's interesting. No, it's so true because so much of us take it for granted. And then when something goes down, or even if you can't find an email, sometimes it just puts you in a tailspin. So you're looking out for all of these things that could go wrong and being preventive or proactive.
Oh, yeah. So a couple of weeks ago, I was actually at the National City Chamber office, and one of my clients called, and she said, oh, all of a sudden, there's all these files on my screen with squiggly lines in front of them and a lot of weird stuff. And I was like, it was 10 minutes from the client's office, and I said, okay, turn off your computer. And I immediately got in the car and raced over to her office because the first thing I'm being paranoid was I was thinking of the encryptor virus. She was suddenly hit by encryptor viruses. And so I get down there and fortunately it's somehow somebody had turned on show hidden files. And so all I had to do is turn it off and that was it. So, but the whole point is I was already going through my disaster recovery process in my head on the way down there. How am I going to handle it? And to make sure that if anything had happened, the company would have been protected. What we do is we have two sets of backups for every client. When we use two different programs on two different types of media, one's the cloud, one's in-house, just in case stuff like that would have happened. Fortunately, it didn't.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I love your little expressions here too about, you know, using your paranoia. I mean, in a positive way. We're going to have to post this podcast on my psych websites too.
I help all my
therapy friends. Yeah.
More than happy to be of any use to that. Yeah. And therapy's helped a lot. I'm currently working with a new psychiatrist and psychologist, and they have me on some new medications, which has helped a lot and really helped focus my energies and definitely changing a lot about my attitudes. I've been making a lot of changes through my entire life. So I'm a big believer in psychiatry, psychology, and also in the appropriate medications.
Well, we're just so grateful for you sharing this because so many people don't talk about these kind of issues. And the fact that you're willing to be open about it is just so helpful to others who might be experiencing these kind of situations and behaviors and not knowing what to do. So thank you.
And the tech industry tends to attract those type of people. I think a lot of people in the tech industry could possibly have some benefit from it. And, as I said, going back to my college, how I got into tech was because I, to compensate for my inability to spell, I wrote the word processing program mm-hmm. that got me into computers. And then that's been something I've been in and out of for, essentially since the 80s. Mm-hmm. And, but it gives me that view that the computers are there to be tools, and they need to be up and running and available. And that's really what we're doing, is we're working with our clients to make sure that, things are boring, that they don't really worry about their computers. It's not an issue. Mm-hmm. They're just going to come in and work.
Right. Like the no news is good news kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yes. That's better from your computer.
And we're under contract with our clients. And so we're a bit like an HMO, and we make sure everything's healthy, and we hope, and it's kind of like it sounds terrible, but we really don't want to hear from our clients.
Yeah.
We want to make sure everything's okay and they're happy, and we get paid basically, a certain amount each month under the contract. And so we want to make sure they're not calling us because we're keeping them happy.
Right.
That's our main goal. But all of our clients, one of my clients is Icelandic, and we went and took a sauna together over on Monday. So,
Wow. Fun.
Very interactive with our clients.
Yeah. Well, speaking of clients, I have a question about relationships here that I really wanted to ask you, because this comes up a lot for me, and people ask me this question about CEO and CIOs, so the relationship there. And so you must be involved in this from an external perspective, working with CIOs, working with CEOs. So what challenges typically come up when you're dealing with these two different roles in an organization?
Well, I mean, generally it's budgeting issues, our biggest concern. Mm-hmm. So people don't want to spend a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And so it's just always a justification of the expenses, also justification of any disruption. So a lot of times we're working with clients, and they're worried about that something's going to cost too much or be disruptive enough. And it's my issue is I need to be able to make the case for doing something has a potential benefit that might, it's like we're selling them something that to prevent something else from happening. Mm-hmm. And if what we sell them is correct, nothing's going to happen. And selling nothing is sometimes a little harder than it should be.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's much easier when they're in the crisis, but you're like, but now it's too late, right?
I'm a very big believer in the saying, never waste a good crisis. A crisis with not our clients, very good. It's one thing, especially in this industry, if you ever come up against a crisis, it's the time to do everything that you need to do to get the customer happy, because they're going to forget about it in 2 days. We had a client, I have another client that they didn't want to deal with multi-factor authentication. I've been telling them for ages, constantly on and on, and document and everything, that you need MFA. Well, obviously they eventually got hacked, and we turned, I was like, okay, let's turn on multi-factor for all your clients. A couple of people were annoyed by it, but most people did it with no problem. So you have to, when something happens, you have to take advantage of it and make sure that's when you can get things in place. You have about 1 to 2 days to do everything. And so, you don't want to lose the initiative.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah, I could totally see that. When they're at their highest anxiety, they're like, okay, yeah, we'll do anything to stop this
that's
and not let it happen again.
That's when you need to. Obviously, you don't want to be abusive or anything like that.
Right.
You want to do everything. You want to be able to go back and, justify everything. Because later, in a month, a lot of times when you do something, somebody's going to come back and question why you did all the stuff you did. And you have to be able to prepare, and you have to be able to justify it. And, it's definitely, if you come up with a client with a serious problem and they're under attack or something, is the best time to do everything.
So how do you talk to CEOs about this? I get it. If you're in there talking to a CIO or somebody who's already technical and you're explaining to them what needs to be done, That's one thing. But somebody who's a business person, how do you find a common language to speak to them?
I've run businesses before, and bigger businesses, and basically try to explain to them how much problems little annoyances cause. So another great example, I was with one client who's very, very cheap, and they didn't want to buy new computers for his staff. And he didn't want to buy a new computer for himself, but his computer eventually died. So I went down, he went down to use one of the computers in the staff room, and it took 20 minutes to do everything it needed to do, literally 20 minutes, just to start up, boot up. And he says, well, why is this? And I said, well, because that's a very old computer. That's how long it takes. And so he, that was like, okay, the whole point is trying to have them see the problem. If you can get them to see the problem and live the problem, is usually one of the big things to get people to change their mind. Once again, if they lose a file or something like that, and you show them how to get it back. So usually being able to demonstrate the problem and having them experience some pain with it, is usually the best way, and to show them that what they're buying is going to save them money and has the benefits. So I always try to sell the benefit and then the potential saving of problems.
Yeah.
And also, part of also you need to, I'm taking sales training with Sandler Training. I just started up here in San Diego. Are you familiar with Sandler?
Yeah, I actually had Brian Jackson as a guest on my show. So you can go.
I was just about to give him a plug.
Oh, great. Well, you are. You're giving him a plug. All right.
Okay, great. Yeah, so I've been going through the training with Brian for the last, it's been almost 5-6 months already. So, and that's helped. And one of the things you have to first do is you have to be in a comfortable position with the person, and you don't want to glad hand them or be false about your friendship, but you have to be in a good place, and they have to trust you, and that's where you work from that point. If they don't, if you're not in that position, it's hard to do anything else.
Okay, so I heard actually two keys I want to make sure to summarize here. One is showing them the problems and what can happen and the benefits. So having them experience it to the best that you can and building that trust.
Right.
The CEOs. Yeah, that's really good. It sounds to me like getting in a sauna with a CEO would be a great way to build a relationship there. Yeah. And whatever, other ways of not just sitting in a meeting together, but getting to know them a little bit, maybe over a meal or something else too.
Yeah. No. And, it's very important. You should know what's happening in their life and, make sure you ask them about, their kids or what else is going on. And it's important to have that relationship and that it's not just business and that you're concerned about, you have to be concerned, genuinely concerned about them, the person, and also their business. And, you're knowledgeable about the business and you want to make sure the business succeeds and be able to demonstrate that to the client.
Okay, well, you talked a little bit about your sales training that you're engaging in now.
Right.
And I'm wondering what other kinds of ways you've learned your people skills. I mean, now that you run a company and you have other people working for you and you're working with people in organizations, how do you handle those people kind of skills?
Oh, God. Historically, my people skills were horrible. I was the worst, if the concept of an incel had existed when I was in high school, I probably would have fallen into that. I've always had problems dealing with people in a lot of different ways, and a lot of, I tend to be misunderstood, and so I've had a lot of history with just problems with dealing with humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's something I've put a lot of effort to trying to resolve and cope. So I've been in therapy, and that's part of the things I'm working on, therapy is on how to relate to people.
Mm-hmm.
And, but just little things like looking people in the eye. I mean, I was doing sales for selling ink, for printing ink,
mm-hmm.
and a long time. And it was just, you know, training myself to look at people's eyes. I have a tendency to look at their mouths because it actually helps me understand what they're saying.
Right.
But just forcing myself to look into people's eyes and just doing little things to try to, you know, make things better, speak clearer, speak slower, smile more, be concerned about other people, ask about them, and don't dominate the conversation. Just basically learning one little thing at a time, mm-hmm. and trying to improve my skills one little bit at a time. My biggest problem is when I'm under stress or something like that, I tend to revert back, and that always becomes an issue. So I always have to make sure that I know how I'm doing and how I'm feeling, and so I can, you know, properly engage the other person. But yeah, it's just that's one of the reasons I took sales training, was, you know, to learn how to sell better, but also as a way of improving myself.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you've gotten to a very sophisticated level, and some of the mindfulness there of understanding where you are and being mindful of how you're feeling at the time to be able to then monitor and change how you are on the outside. Yeah, that takes a lot of work. And, you know, to get to that point shows that you've actually gone through a lot on your own.
Sure.
Yeah. Let's see. So, when you're talking about your company here, you've mentioned a few things that you do. I'm wondering how people can get in touch with you, like if they want to do IT or ask you any questions, if you're willing to talk about some of the other things you talked about.
I love talking to people, and we work very hard to always pick up the phone. My office number is 619-293-8600. Option 4 goes directly to me. And even after hours, my cell phone rings after hours. It said this morning at 7 o'clock or 6:50, I was helping a client with their Outlook. So we're very much there. I'm on LinkedIn under Bob Solomon, very active there. Also on Facebook, and I also have a business account, a business version, CIO Systems Inc. on both of those. So very easy to get hold of. There's another company that stole my name up north in the Bay Area. And so there's some confusion sometimes between my company and theirs. So just always make sure you're looking at the right company. My website is ciosys.com. And there's some information there. But you know, the best way to get a hold of me is call me, or my email is bob@ciosys.com. And I love talking to people, and you know, especially if I can help you out, I'd love to have any opportunities.
Well, let me also ask you, just since we have a second here, about if people want to get involved in any of the community activities that you do as well. I mean, you're at the Chamber of Commerce, National City, the South Bay Economic Council. Take a moment to just tell us if people are interested in reaching out and networking, like how they might do that with you there.
And there's a lot of other groups. I'm going to the Chula Vista Chamber tomorrow night for their gala. And there's so many opportunities in San Diego to network that there's too many. you were mentioning one. There's Six Degrees. There's Network at Night. And there's so many. So there's always things, but the key thing is you want to be someplace where you think you can help and where it's interesting for you. And, if they want to call me, I'm more than willing to try to get them set up with somebody in their area. I have connections throughout the county.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's no lack of places where people can help, especially, considering it's an election year. there's also the political stuff and everything also.
You know, that's just such a great way of phrasing it, though. I mean, the key to networking here, last little nugget from your show here, is that the key to networking is helping others, right?
Oh, that's, if you're familiar with BNI, yeah. Business Networking International, which I also belong to, is givers gain.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is, you know, I'm just always, I mean, really nothing gives me more pleasure than when I can make a connection. So if I can see that if, you know, somebody has a need, and I know they can connect somebody, that's usually best. And I don't do it because I'm going to get anything directly out of it. I just do it because it's really fun to do. So, yeah. I mean, it's like, as soon as I see a connection, it's like, oh, I got to deal with this. And I immediately text the two people and say, hey, you guys should get together and talk. And, you know, I see there's potential chemistry between you two. And it's really great. I mean, yeah, I've just found a job by some lady who called me. You know, most of my referrals come from my competitors. And So I got a call from this lady who was referred to me by one of my competitors. And I ended up talking to her, and she runs a bar. And my friend is a bartender, and she was looking for a job. So I was like, great, I can put these two people together and get them, you know, together and doing stuff. And that's always the most fun thing to do.
Well, I just think this is remarkable. You have gone from what you say being a C and D student and being having challenges dealing with people and humanity to being one of the most successful networkers that I know. And, you know, running and doing a service job there. So, wow, you've come a long way. And I think some of your lessons there are going to be really helpful to others who are thinking and moving in that direction. So thank you so much for being a guest on our show.
And thank you. It's been a pleasure and an honor to be here to do this with you.
Well, thanks. And thanks to our viewers and listeners. We're at reinventingnerds.com, and we'll see you next time.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of Reinventing Nerds and encourage you to apply what you learned to help you communicate better. For a free consultation with Joni to see how she can help you further, please visit reinventingnerds.com. Until then, embrace your inner nerd and remain true to yourself while you develop your communication strategies.